Hi, this is Robert Woolsey, and joining me from her studio in Brooklyn is former KCAW reporter Rachel Waldholz. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Rob. If by studio you mean my living room, then yes, that is where I am.
I was trying to kind of level you up a little bit, Rachel. Come on. Rachel, I'm sort of just going to cut to the chase. You are actually working for NPR now. You're an NPR editor.
Yes, I am an editor on NPR's climate desk, and my role is so editing climate news, both national reporters, but also specifically working with member stations. And actually in this role, I'm working with specifically with member stations, one of which is here in Alaska, Alaska Public Media, which is also another one of my old homes, and a station in Virginia working on sort of not just bringing in climate stories for national news, but also like increasing capacity for climate reporting at local and regional stations.
I think that is just so great because I do remember writing a recommendation for you for the Kroc Fellowship, right? And we thought, this is Rachel's ticket to the big time. And you were a finalist, but you didn't make it, and was like, oh, their loss. But as so often happens, you sort of went out and whatever the term is, you made your nut out in the world. And
is that the term?
I think so. And now they've hired you back. I don't know. I just find such justice and satisfaction in that.
Yeah, that's so funny because that was 2013 because I interned at KCAW in 2012 and was a finalist for the Kroc Fellowship in 2013. And so it only took 10 more years, Rob, for me to get to NPR. Yeah, but in that time, I mean, it's funny to think about because I ended up spending 5 years as reporter in Alaska, you know, 2 in Sitka and 3 in Anchorage, which, you know, was not on my radar in 2013.
Well, I recall none of this was on your radar. I think during your interview when you were a graduate student at UC Berkeley, Graduate School of Journalism, I think you were pretty candid about, hey, I'm in the documentary program. I need to develop some skills in radio. I'm in the class, and I think it would be valuable for me. But, you know, documentary is where I'm at. And then you came up to Sitka, and no more documentaries.
Yeah, Sitka, you guys turned me into a radio person. I showed up in 2012 as an intern with no radio background. And I remember you and Ed Ronco was the reporter. And I remember you and Ed handing me a microphone and a Marantz and like sending me out into the street being like, this is how you record. Go record some sounds. I was like, okay. And I remember walking around like trying to figure out like with my shotgun mic and like recording the sounds of like ravens, you know, walking around Totem Square. So that was the beginning of my time as a radio reporter. And by the time that summer was over, I was like, oh, like forget documentary, like images, visuals, so hard, sticking with radio. Immediate, fun, live broadcast, let's do this.
I've converted many documentary students to radio. You're one of quite an elite group. And did I ever give you my line that when you're a reporter at KCAW, you're really doing the documentary of Southeast Alaska one day at a time?
I'm sure that you gave me a speech very similar to that. I feel like the ethos of that is the role of the newsroom is to document and witness and dig into, you know, the community around you is something that I so appreciated in the newsroom, you know, and having been in many different newsrooms now and visited lots of newsrooms, like that taking local community journalism seriously while also like not taking yourselves too seriously, I mean, it's just such a gift, you know, and I just felt incredibly lucky to land in a newsroom that felt that way about it, you know.
Rachel, I have an overwhelming urge to call you Waldholz, by the way, so if I if I slip into that mode, just virtually.
You and half the people in my life.
Okay.
There's too many Rachels in the world.
I want to hear your KCAW story, and I want to hear about what you felt internally was happening to you kind of as a professional, as you felt yourself becoming sort of more firmly rooted in this career, and then the transition to the energy desk, and then, you know, sort of where you went from there. A lot of the people we're talking about during this Newsmatch event seem to carry a lot of KCAW with them wherever they go. They've all ended up in jobs doing things where they almost sort of touch back to their experience here daily. But I wonder if you could just sort of share your journey.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's very funny, Rob, when I first got hired at NPR, you join like the NPR Slack channel or whatever. And I got a message from Emily Kwong, who of course was the reporter at KCAW right after me and now is a host at NPR. And she Slacked me and also Sally Helm, who was in Sitka. I was there. And she sent a note and she said, everyone in the Slack channel knows what the monthly grind is. And like, we're the only people at NPR that know what it is. And it was like, oh yeah, there's a KCAW mafia at NPR now, you know? I mean, there's an Alaska mafia at NPR. But what I remember is I came up as an intern in 2012, and then I graduated from grad school in 2013. And that fall, I think Ed took a job in Seattle. And so you called and said like, can you fill in for 6 weeks? And I was like, I was living in California in Oakland at the time. And I remember telling a friend, like, I'm going up to Alaska for 6 weeks. If I try to stay longer, don't let me. I was like, I'm just going for 6 weeks. It's just like, I just need a job for a little while. And I came up to Sitka in like the fall of 2013 and reported for, you know, whatever that stretch was, and then ended up applying for the job. And I actually remember you told me that I got the job on a post-it note while I was on the phone with someone. I was doing an interview. You put a little like post-it note on my keyboard and said like, you got the job, we'll talk later. and that was how I ended up staying in Sitka for 2 years after that.
I can't believe it's already been 10 years since that.
Yes, I also cannot believe that, Rob.
Yeah. You're climate editor at NPR now, so you're dialed into these things, but you were reporting with me when the landslides happened in Sitka in 2015.
Yeah.
Was that kind of a seminal event for you as a reporter, as it was for me?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that remains to this day, like, just one of the hardest stories I've ever covered. That actually, the landslide was just a couple weeks before I left Sitka. I was leaving to take a job in Anchorage as an energy reporter. And yeah, I just remember so viscerally, you know, sort of the chaos as the news came in and trying to figure out, you know, how to cover it and where we needed to be, and just the need to get information out to the community, just like to let people know what was happening. And, you know, in local news, there's so many different parts of local news. There's like, you know, the fun story with like kids' voices that you tell, you know, from the schools, and there's, you know, accountability stuff, and there's like long nights covering the assembly. But like, sort of that moment of covering the landslide was like, oh, this is why we're here. It's like, because people need to know what's going on. And so we need to tell them, you know, we need to find out and share that information. Yeah, but that was just like a devastating experience.
Yeah, I gave a workshop at Press Club last year in Anchorage. I was joined by Jocelyn Estes and Rhonda McBride, who are two long-term reporters in the state. And there were so many young faces in the rooms, sort of the Rachel Waldholtzes of the present. And, you know, a lot of stuff happens in Alaska. A lot of not so great stuff happens in Alaska. And they were just looking at us like, what do we do? What do we do when something like this goes down in our town? And I remember telling them, and this is, I think, what we both sort of learned simultaneously in 2015, is that first, you are a human. Second, you are a community member. And third, you are a reporter with an enormous responsibility to get this information out.
Just sort of an experience unlike any other, in that you are shocked at the same time as the community is shocked, and grieving at the same time as the community is grieving, and also trying to sort of carry out this responsibility, you know, much as so many people who are responding to a disaster like that are. And, you know, one of the people that we lost in landslide was my neighbor across the street, William Stortz, who was a good friend that would bring me salmon every summer and leave it in a bag on my doorknob. And that stuff is, yeah, it was incredibly challenging, and also just an incredible honor to, you know, to be able to like do something useful in a moment like that, you know, like helping people understand what was going on.
William was a huge fan of public radio, and he's one of an early board member of the station and classical music devotee. And it's no wonder he was feeding you salmon. He was just feeding the pipeline that he was turning on, you know, and listening to every morning at 6:49. But we never publicized this, but we won a Murrow Award for landslide coverage, you and I both. Mm-hmm. In fact, I've never mentioned it publicly till now. The only person I ever told was Libby, his wife, because she knew that he really cared about public radio and the strength of this newsroom in particular.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's really lovely to hear. Yeah. I mean, what has been really interesting to me, you know, now as I've moved more into climate coverage is so I'm editing now on the climate desk at NPR, which is a new creation in the last year. We realized that climate change is not just a science story and sort of pulled climate out from the science desk to have sort of a dedicated desk covering that beat. And then my job was created sort of a new role with this mission to sort of help member stations build their climate reporting capacity. And as part of that role, I'm working specifically with Kavitha George, who's the climate reporter at Alaska Public Media. And so I'm sort of plugged back into Alaska News, which has been this huge pleasure. But in the last, you know, several weeks ago when there was the landslide in Wrangell, and I got a call from Molly Kabler in the morning because they needed some editing support saying, you know, can you help, you know, while we figure out how to get reporters there. And it was just a reminder to me that, you know, that landslide, which was really a milestone in my life and such a sort of devastating event in Sitka, that is now part of the larger climate story that needs to be told in Southeast, which is that, you know, the region is seeing these more intense heavy rainstorms, and that is making these kinds of devastating landslides more likely. And how are communities responding to that? And how are communities adapting to that? And like, that is exactly the kind of sort of climate coverage that I think is so important. It's like, why I think it's important to have a climate desk is to, you know, because sure, there's a science story there, but that's a human story. That's a policy story. That's a community story. How do you respond to these things? How do we prepare for these things? How do we live in this new world? Yeah, it was upsetting to see that news in Wrangell, having lived through it in Sitka. And also it felt like, okay, we really need to be paying attention to this.
So Rachel, what about after Alaska? Where have you been all this time?
Great question, Rob. So from Sitka, I was in Anchorage for about 3 years covering the oil industry and environment and climate change for Alaska Public Media and Alaska's Energy Desk. And then I got a fellowship to go to Berlin. So I was in Germany. It was a year-long fellowship. Germany has like pretty interesting climate and energy policies. They've had this like 30-year energy transition that they're in the midst of. So it was going over there to sort of understand like, what does climate energy policy look like in a country that is taking it perhaps more seriously than the US was at that point. And so I was there for a year on that fellowship and just totally loved Berlin, ended up staying and freelancing. And so then I was in Germany for about 4 years altogether. And what was interesting was while I was there, there was the Fridays for Future sort of youth climate movement. So there was this huge youth movement in starting in like the winter 2018, 2019 movement, where you had like hundreds of thousands, millions of high school and middle school kids in the streets protesting for more climate action. So like, this is when Greta Thunberg first started her school strikes, and then all of these kids came out into the streets afterwards. So I just had this experience in the winter of 2019, I guess, of every Friday, there would just be hundreds of thousands of teenagers in the streets in Berlin, you know, protesting for climate action. I just had never seen anything like it. It was really remarkable. And, you know, I'd be out there with my microphone and my Marantz recording people and talking to all of these like extremely poised 16-year-old German high school kids who of course spoke fluent English about, you know, the need for more climate action. That was a really interesting place to be at that moment in history.
And it was happening in Sitka too. The kids went out into the parking lot and the reporters showed up and they were speaking about climate action. It was really cool that they tapped into that same movement. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at some point in Germany, I mean, you loved it, the Berlin culture, but like the Beatles, you decided to come back.
Yeah, so I came back to the U.S. While I was in Germany, I got hired onto a podcast at Gimlet Media, which is part of Spotify. They were launching a climate podcast called How to Save a Planet. So I got hired to join that podcast right when the pandemic started. And so initially they were like, well, there's a global pandemic, so we'll just leave you in Germany for now. And that ended up being like a year and a half more in Germany. But eventually they were like, all right, you want this job, you got to come do it from Brooklyn. And so I was working on that podcast for a couple of years, which was super cool because I think when I was in Anchorage, I was reporting on energy and the oil industry and the environment, and climate was like part of my beat. But I think after that, I was like, okay, I want to cover climate change. I want to be like a radio reporter covering climate change. I want that to be my job. And like that job didn't exist. NPR had two, and that, like, that was kind of it. And so when How to Save a Planet launched in 2020, it was like, oh, look, like this is like, you know, reporting on climate change with like a solutions focus. It's like not all doom and gloom. The hosts were Alex Bloomberg, who's one of the original founders of Planet Money, and Dr. Ayanna Elizabeth Johnson, who's like a great marine biologist and climate expert. And they wanted to do like, they were like, we want to do a show about climate change that you'll actually listen to. So it's like, you know, not all doom and gloom. And it was awesome to have that experience and get to sort of dive into climate change from that angle.
Rachel, you know, we have a climate reporter in Sitka as well, but our climate reporter is also our assembly reporter and our fire hall reporter and our school district reporter.
Yes, I remember that role. Yes.
And our fish and game reporter and our North Pacific Fisheries Management Council reporter. You really do a bit of everything.
It's so funny you said North Pacific Fisheries Management Council. And what I remember is when I was a reporter at KCAW, you decided we needed to be pitching stories to NPR more often as like a training exercise. We were all going to do it. And we should just pitch and not worry about getting rejected. In fact, every time we got rejected, you would give me a rejection point. So just start pitching NPR. And so I pitched them a story about the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council was meeting in Sitka, and there was a big fight about halibut. And so I pitched that story to the Western Bureau Chief, Jason DeRose, for my rejection point, but then he didn't reject it. And so then I had to do like 3 minutes and 30 seconds of national radio, like explaining like a very complicated halibut quota system fight. And that was my first story ever nationally on NPR, was because you said, I'm handing out rejection points. Whoever gets the most gets something.
Rachel, we still have that postie. It's on Catherine Rose's desk, but somebody who didn't understand the significance of it has scratched out rejection and written acceptance, you know, kind of a little Zen thing. But the rejection.
No, we are seeking rejection.
We
here.
Seek rejection because if mm-hmm. we're not getting rejected, we're not asking for enough as reporters. Rachel, I think it would be great if one day you sort of got back into a reporter's role, but I feel like you're in a good place now working at NPR. My first thought was that you're at NPR in Washington, D.C., but you're working out of your place in Brooklyn. Do you ever get called to the mothership and hang out with Emily Kwong and do the Washington, D.C. thing?
I do get called to the mothership, and when I go down, I do make sure to hang out with Emily Kwong. But NPR also has a bureau up here in New York, so I'm working sort of part-time out of the New York bureau and part-time from my living room. And then like every 2 or 3 months I'm down in DC, which is really fun. I mean, I have to say, like, it's, you know, I remember being a reporter at Alaska Public Media and getting flown into the headquarters for a training, and, you know, Ari Shapiro would come in and talk to you, and it was like, oh my God, this is so exciting. And then to, you know, to be back as an editor, and you're like in the elevator, and, you know, Ari Shapiro is just like your colleague, and you're like, okay, cool. It's very exciting. You're still sort of starstruck, you know?
Starstruck is how we feel about you, Rachel.
Thanks, so. Rob. I appreciate that.
Rachel, it's been nice catching up with you. I'm sorry it's been so long, but
it's been such a pleasure.
Yeah, it feels like we've been following your star from afar, and I think it's awesome that you were at the climate desk when the Wrangell landslide happened, because the first thing you said is, hi, I'm Rachel. I've worked in Alaska. I know what you're going through. Obviously, we're not doing a climate story today. How can I help? And it was so cool that you understood that.
Just, you know, watching from afar, that was such an impressive effort between, you know, all the Coast Alaska stations, because the Wrangell news director, the previous Wrangell news director had just moved on to Bethel, and the new Wrangell news director had arrived, what, like a day or two before.
One day, yeah.
And one day in town. And, you know, and it was just like, you know, the whole region mobilized, right? You know, you had, you know, Angela Denning coming in from Petersburg and Anna Canny from Juneau and Sage helping from Bethel and Lori and Casey from Anchorage and Kavitha. And it was just, it was a reminder to me of how special the Alaska network is, you know, that there are all these reporters all over the state and the way that everyone works together, and just, you know, that is my model for, you know, how public media should work.
Rachel, we're just about out of time. Thanks so much for doing this. And I feel a little nostalgic. You look exactly like that intern from UC Berkeley all those years ago.
Oh, thanks, Rob.
Could you have the decency to age?
Trying not to. Thanks, Rob. It's such a pleasure. It's so nice to see you.
Thanks, Rachel.